Blog Talk Radio.
Dallas, Texas. It's Monday, July the 4th, and as we've done the last couple of times, the last couple of years, we'll be chatting with our friend Frank Burke. Frank, of course, a businessman up in Wisconsin. He's also the author of a book as well as a contributor to American Thinker. And over the last couple of years, we've used this show to talk a little bit about July 4th and what does it mean to us? What can we learn from the Declaration? What can we learn from these men who got together 240 years ago and put everything on the line? That's the amazing thing about the Declaration. They put everything on the line for what they believed. And, of course, the great phrase out of the Declaration, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So we'll see what surprise Frank has for us this year, but I'm sure it's going to be an absolutely wonderful, wonderful show because Frank always has something very interesting to say. So now that I've said all these nice things about Frank Burke, let me say hello to him. How are you, Frank?
Well, thank you very much, Silvio. How are you?
Absolutely great.
To all our listeners and especially to our grandson, Ryan, who is a history enthusiast, and his brother and sister who may be listening in today.
Well, that would be great. I mean, they can hear you and they can learn something like all of us are going to do. But it's fun. I had an experience one time with another guest where his or her daughter or grandson, I'm sorry, was like 6 or 9 months old and was listening to the grandmother on the computer, on the radio, and he was able to identify the voice and was kind of happy that the grandmother was on the show. So we wish your grandchildren the very best, and we say to them that they have a very, very intelligent grandfather. I'll just put it that way.
That may be a little overdoing it.
Okay. All right. Well, how is the weather up in Wisconsin before we get to all the serious stuff?
The weather has been absolutely beautiful. It's been in the 60s and 70s. It's in the 70s today. It was sunny the last few days, cloudy today, but it hasn't been hot. It hasn't been really bad, so we're having a very nice summer so far, if you like nice, cool Wisconsin weather.
Well, we're if you like a nice, warm Texas summer, that's what we're having. That's what we're having. We're actually having a very warm summer. It's we got a lot of rain, last night and today in the morning. It was actually raining very hard and lightning and thundering and all of that very hard. So we woke up to a lot of noise today, you know, a lot of noise on the windows and all the lightning. But we need the rain down here. Whenever it rains, we need it. I mean, there's no
That's
such
great.
Thing as too much. There's no such thing as too much rain. Here in Texas, we really need all the rain we can get, even if it all comes in one day. You know, we need all the rain we can get. But as we've done the last couple of years, we've tried to put our spin, if you will, our touch on what this day means. And I wanted to continue these chats. I've always been Frank, I've always been absolutely fascinated by life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness because when you look at it, it's maybe something that a person today would have a different meaning than maybe 240 years ago. So as best you could tell, you know, from what you've read and how you've looked at this document, what do you think Jefferson had in mind when he wrote Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Happiness? And I say Jefferson because he was kind of given the idea, that he was kind of given the rough draft, if you will, and he was told to put it in in a readable format, you know, because he was kind of he was the one with the pen. You know, they all had great ideas, but he was the one who could actually, you know, put it in a form that would be easy to read. So what do you think they meant by that, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? Let me start with that.
Well, I think that by life they meant, of course, the freedom to live as you please, life and liberty. And liberty, the ability to do within the bounds of the law what you wanted to do. The third one is a little tricky because in those days what happiness meant was the ability to be a good person, a good citizen, to be an upstanding member of society. It didn't mean self-gratification, you know, roller coasters or candy canes or whatever. It meant the ability to be upright and to be a part of society as you wanted to be, whatever. So that really was what he had in mind there.
So he wasn't thinking so much about, you know, we think of happiness today, we think of a new car, maybe a new computer. That certainly that's not what he had in mind. He was thinking about being able to fulfill, to have a fulfilled life. Would that be it? I mean, kind of like, I want to be what I want to be. I want to be a great farmer. I want to be a great farmer.
Yes, to have a life that had meaning, to live a life that was fulfillment and meaning, and went beyond the idea of self-gratification.
Now, how much were they thinking about God? I know they did when they wrote about the Creator, that these rights come from the Creator. But when they were talking about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, how much do you think they were thinking about a religious life or being connected with God? Was that a part of it, do you think?
Oh, very much so. And in fact, that leads me to, it'll be a rather long paragraph, but if you don't mind.
No, please. It's never long with you, Frank.
Well, basically, Sylvia, one of the things that I got to thinking about some time ago, and it really did have to do with religion to a very great extent, we are all taught in school that the Declaration of Independence is a tremendous, you know, had worldwide importance. It was an earth-shaking document. The message went around the world and created a tremendous stir that continues to today because aspects of it are, it's still valid today. And why was that? Okay, on the surface, the Declaration of Independence is the very bold assertion from one group of colonies to what was then the most powerful nation on earth, England, that we're leaving. It was an act of absolute defiance by what seemed like a rather puny nation to a much larger one. But in reality, it was much more than that. And to understand that, I have to take you back, and this is where the long paragraph comes in, okay? If you recall, in those times, you may not recall, but as you have heard, in those times, much of the Western world was ruled by kings and emperors. You had a king of England, you had a king of France, you had an emperor of Austria-Hungary, you could go a czar of Russia, you could go on and on and on. Now, how did that come to be? Okay, in the year 313 A.D., the Roman Empire was beginning to crumble, and the Emperor Constantine was about to go into a battle that he thought he would lose. And before going in, he saw in the sky a cross and the words, "In hoc signo vinces," "In this sign thou shalt conquer." Well, he immediately put down the Roman eagles, put up crosses, won the battle, and then had the whole world convert, the whole Western world convert to Christianity. He then left Rome. He established himself at Constantinople. But within a century, the Roman Empire, which had knitted together the Western world, had fallen. and there was a tremendous vacuum of authority. So the authority that people chose, that the kings and rulers chose, because they were Christian, was the figure of the Pope, the vicar of Christ on earth. And the Pope thereby, after that period, was invested with not only spiritual power, but temporal power. He was a ruler. He defined boundaries. He settled disputes between nations. He crowned kings. He determined a tremendous amount, and all of this was just given to him. Now, one of the ways, of course, people in those days were extremely religious Christians. And one of the things that was a symbol of papal and really divine authority was something called divine right, the divine right of kings. And what that said was, pretty much, God controls everything. So if you are a king, you're a king because God wants you to be a king. And as a result, if anybody goes against you, they are not just going against a king, they are going against God. And so the king became the fount of law. The king promulgated the laws. Now, you had a big wrinkle in the Reformation, but even recall that, at least in England, the Reformation started when the Pope refused Henry VIII's divorce. And he went first to the Pope, which is the significant part of this. So, okay, even after the Reformation, that divine right of kings continued. In fact, to this day, the motto on the English crest is in French, Dieu et mon droit, which means God and my right. So that's a holdover from that. Okay, so here you have these people in the United States. And I'm going to begin, if you don't mind, by reading of the Declaration.
Sure, go ahead.
When in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them. Here's God coming into it. A decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. So here we have it. This is an open letter to the world from the representatives of the United States. Now we really get into it. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, and that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. By their Creator, not by the king. We're throwing away the authority of the king and saying, hey, your rights to these things don't come from a royal government, they come from God. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. And that is so true. It's not just because somebody was born a king over you or a queen. It's because the people choose. And this is what's especially relevant today. This is very relevant, Mr. Obama, to your executive pronouncements, and Mr. Crystal, to your idea about throwing away the results of the primaries because you didn't like them. This is the rule of the people, and that's where that comes from. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive to these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute a new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Mm. Now, a caution, and then I'll stop. Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. And accordingly, all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they're accustomed.
Yeah. Well, I think that when I bring myself to the present, you know, from 1776 to the president I would agree with you when you said Mr. Obama, because when in order for any government to exist, now you can have a dictatorship where they put a gun to your head, and that's how they govern, okay? But if it's going to be a free people of any kind, there has to be consent. You know, the people have to feel like the ones writing the rules or writing the laws have, you know, they've consented to it. They've accepted it somehow. And I think that that's where we're at right now, which is a little risky, it seems to me, in the history of the United States. That's where I think it's scary right now. And this is why, you know, why I think it's important to talk about the Declaration, not just the historic document, but as a living document in a way. Because when you see, for example, let's say a Supreme Court, and I don't want to get off on the Supreme Court, but I think that there you have seen examples of the Supreme Court basically inventing rights like abortion or the right to same-sex marriage. And I'm not going to argue abortion or same-sex marriage. I mean, people can have honest disagreements about that. But it's the way it came about. That's what I'm talking about. Had it come about because a legislature or the Congress passed a law that says marriage is, you know, there should be no one definition of marriage, or abortion is allowed, and that had been passed by the Congress and signed by the president, I don't like it, but at least it went through the right procedures. But when it's when you have a Supreme Court, like, for example, just recently throwing back these decisions that we had made here in Texas about abortion clinics, when you have that kind of governing that way, I really think that that's what they were talking about the consent of the governed. If you lose that consent of the governor, of the governed, I think it's only a matter of time before the whole system just collapses. And you have talk of secession, you have talk of you have a disconnect between the government and the people. And I fear very strongly that we are close to that, Frank. I don't know whether we're closer to it than in any other time in history. That I cannot tell you. But we're pretty close right now, at least the history that I've lived, Frank, these last 30, 40 years or whatever.
I absolutely agree with you, Silvio. I think we're on a very, very dangerous path. And it's much more, because you're dealing with a president, you're dealing with an administration that refuses to enforce the laws that he swore that he would enforce. That's the whole crux of the immigration problem. And you know, when you look at what happened with Texas, with that abortion thing, I can remember when they were trying to pass Roe v. Wade or any of the legalization of abortion, the reason given always was, we want to do this so that women won't have to go to back alley, dirty, unsafe places to have abortions. And all the legislation in Texas and in some other places came about because of the Gosdell case in Philadelphia, where the guy had a filthy, dirty clinic. And it was a very reasonable request that doctors have admitting privileges to hospitals. If something goes wrong, you can go in there. You'll be saved. But it's totally out of whack now.
Right. And I think what's interesting to me, Frank, is, and this is where I have such an issue with this whole abortion issue. And again, if abortion, I just want to repeat myself, if abortion had happened through a state legislature and through a regular constitutional process, I wouldn't like it, but hey, I have to accept it that I'm in the minority. I wouldn't like it, but I would accept it. But what you basically have is, you have this last opinion of the court basically saying the law of the land is that abortion is legal. Well, that's not really the law of the land. He's saying that an opinion written in 1973 by a judge in a co-equal branch of the federal government is now the law of the land. If we're going to start doing that, a lot of things are going to become the law of the land. The judge can just invent them. So I'm not trying to get off on a debate about abortion, because I know that's a complicated issue. But I'm just trying to to say that I feel very strongly that that we are at a very serious point in the nation's history, and maybe it, not as serious as the Civil War, maybe not as serious as other moments, but I think it's certainly in our lifetime, Frank, the most serious. I really believe that there is a something going on in the country where the level of dissatisfaction is running at a very high level, and I think a lot of it is because people don't this consent of the governed is not there, Frank. I really think that's what it is.
I think you're absolutely right, Silvio, and you can see it in so many ways. And, you know, the problem is with the Supreme Court and in so many other courts that the purpose of a court and a judge is to rule on the law. It is not to make law. It's not to interpret law in a way that comports with their particular ideology or idea of what the law should be. And we have that happening all over the place. And that's what's so scary, because without that, without the law, and that's what we're losing here. We're losing the law. Without the law, you have chaos. Another example of that is what's happened with Colorado and these other states that are legalizing marijuana. Now, you may or may not agree with the legalization of marijuana or the partial legalization of marijuana, but the fact is that there are federal laws forbidding the use or the sale of drugs, and marijuana is one of them. So how can you have this legal dualism where you have one federal law and then other states are passing laws and there's nothing being said? There's nothing being said by the federal government to the effect of, I'm sorry, that's got to go. If you want to change the law, change it at the federal level.
You're right, and I think that's my whole point. You know, with President Obama, he enforces the laws that he likes and does not enforce then the laws that he doesn't like. I'll just give you another example. There's an embargo against doing business with Cuba, with the Cuban government. An American mm-hmm. hotel wants to set up in Cuba. Well, that's illegal right now under the law. So they dance around the law. And my point is, if you don't like the embargo, change it. Call on Congress to change it and give you a different law. But don't operate like this, where this is illegal, but yet we tolerate it. And then we go out, we enforce this one because we like it, but we don't enforce that one because it's not politically convenient. The marijuana law, I think, is simply a case. It's not politically convenient for the Democrat Party to enforce it because they feel that a lot of their base is in favor of it. And I think that, again, where I'm going with all of this, and that's why I'm so happy that we're talking to you on July 4th, is that I feel that Jefferson and these men were giving us, were warning us back then. They were saying, look, we're doing this because we don't feel that the king cares about us or is ruling over us or is not respecting our rights. And I think there's a lot of Americans who feel that way today. I know Wisconsin has one of these abortion clinics laws that I think was also overturned, just like Texas. Mm-hmm. And I'm simply saying, if we've gotten to the point where a judge can tell the people of Texas that they cannot have safety rules in their abortion clinics, what's next? I mean, what are they going to say next? That our speeding limits are not right? So I just feel that there's a disconnect, and a lot of it is being brought about for some of the same conditions, I think, that these men back in 1776 were rebelling against the government. I'm not suggesting that we should have a revolution. I'm not suggesting that we should have secession, but I am very seriously suggesting that we need a constitutional amendment, Frank, to give this car a tune-up, if I could put it that way, Frank.
Well, we really do. We need to get back to the basics. You know, a large part of the Declaration of Independence, following what I've read, is a recitation. It's an indictment of the many things that the King of England is responsible for that really hurt the colonists, our founding fathers. And they laid it all out. And as a result, many of the things that they mentioned were later incorporated or remedied in the Bill of Rights to the Constitution so as to protect people. And today you have people who are working their hardest to destroy the Bill of Rights. I mean, the First Amendment is free speech and freedom of religion. And yet you have people who want to punish individuals who don't believe in climate change.
Exactly.
You have people wanting to stop the discourse on any number of subjects that they disagree with. And then the Second Amendment, of course, the right to keep and bear arms. You have all kinds of nonsense around that, and all of which is based on the fact that gun laws are fatuous on the face of it because they're based on the belief that criminals obey the law.
That's
and they
right.
don't.
That's right.
Why they're criminals.
That's why they're criminals. Frank, let me take a quick break. And then we'll come back and we'll finish our segment with Frank Berg as we talk July 4th. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, and we're doing, I think it's our third annual, Frank. Our third annual.
I think you're right, Silvio.
Yeah, our third annual July 4th. I like to do a lot more of these, as many as we can do, because it's important to look back at the document and talk about today. But, you know, speaking of the gun control, I don't know if you saw this post. I wrote a little post today over at the American Thinker talking about the day that Jesse James met the Second Amendment. That's the title of the and the story is like this. I'll make it brief. I'll let people read the article. But basically, Jesse James and his gang went up to Minnesota to rob a bank. They wanted to rob a bank up in Minnesota. They were down in Missouri, so they went all the way up to Minnesota, which in those days was a real field trip. And they went up there and robbed a bank because the bank, they learned that the bank in Minnesota was owned either by the guy, the Reconstruction governor of Mississippi, or his family. So they wanted to get back at this Reconstruction governor by robbing his bank. So they go up there, you know, six or seven of them go up there, and Jesse and Frank walk into the bank, and, you know, with their guns, and they're basically shooting people, not immediately, but eventually they shot two or three people because they wanted the money, and they couldn't get the money. But then something incredible happened. The people in the town began hearing that the bank was being attacked and people were being killed by these strangers who had come from another part of the country. So they all picked up their guns and they went after the James gang. And so they started having a shootout, and Jesse James and Frank James were lucky to get out of town alive. And eventually, I guess Jesse and Frank disappeared for a couple of years because they were scared to death that these guys are coming after them. And my whole point is that the reason that Jesse, you know, did not get away with it that day is because there were people in that town willing to defend the town with their guns, and also because that town was not, and I say was not, a gun-free zone where people mm-hmm. couldn't have guns. And I'm just saying that, to me, I was watching that show Saturday night. This is a show that AMC is running called The History of the West. And I'm just sitting there saying to myself, you know, Robert Redford is the executive producer of this show. And I was saying to myself, my gosh, Robert Redford has just done the best advertisement that I've ever seen for the Second Amendment. Because, I mean, you could just see right there why we have one. It's interesting. I just wanted to say that because obviously Jesse James was a criminal, and gun laws would never have stopped him. But it was citizens in the town who stopped him. Well, Frank, as we wrap up, I just wanted to get your sense. You know, I don't want to leave on a pessimistic note because, you know, I agree with you. We have some real problems. But perhaps the optimist is in all of us is the fact that it is the United States, that we've had problems before, and we've been able to overcome these problems. And I personally would love to see a constitutional convention. I think the country really needs it. Maybe that's the answer. Maybe that's the optimist answer, Frank.
Well, I think it could be a good answer. I think one other thing, though, that we can never overlook is the fact that in all that we've talked about, the point of reference for our founding fathers was God. It was a belief in God who gives these things, gives these rights to people, a God who extends his protection. And I don't think there's any doubt but that God has protected this country, and we just pray that he continues to do so, because we haven't treated him too well in many, many areas.
No, in fact, we you're exactly right. He would have a good case for being angry with us.
He sure would.
The way we've treated him, certainly in so many ways. But I've always had a belief in the same thing you just said, that I think God cares about the United States. I've always felt the United States was not just an accident. I've always felt that this thing, when you look at the history of the country, for example, the fact that July 4th, 1826, the 50th anniversary of the Declaration, Thomas Jefferson and John Adams died on that day. When you see little
mm-hmm.
things like that, you just feel as if somebody is overlooking the country. But right now, I think you're right. I think getting back to those, not necessarily overly religious, but just some of the common sense ideas that our founding fathers have. But I think most of all, to me, the biggest thing we have to do, Frank, is that we have to get back to a time when the country was more decentralized, because I think it was a better country.
Yes.
When it was more decentralized, when people were running their own lives in Texas and Wisconsin. Yes, we had to come together on some federal things, of course, but I think the country functioned a lot better when, you know, we weren't getting letters from the president telling us that we have to do transgender bathrooms. You know, that's
exactly.
That's what I mean.
Yes, definitely. Well, you know, on the one hand, we've talked about the divine aspect, but on the physical aspect, Sir Isaac Newton's laws of physics, the third law, for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. So let's hope that after all of this ultra-leftist nonsense that has seemed to hold sway for so long, we can now have an opposite reaction that sets the scale right again.
Well, I sure hope so. I sure hope so. And, of course, this election this year would be a good place to start. But I think you're right. I think we need to balance this thing a little bit, because it's gone a little crazy, particularly on the social issues. I really think that when you have the Secretary of Defense having a press conference to talk about transgender members of the military, first of all, we don't have a problem with transgenders. I mean, we're finding a solution for a problem we don't have. And
right.
But it's because they're just trying to score political points with certain elements of the LGBT community, because they need to energize them for the election, Frank. That's what it's all about.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I mean, that's all that it's just a silly distraction trying to score some political points. Well, Frank, you have to promise me we'll do it again next July 4th. I mean, we'll do
you
it many other times. We'll do it many other times, but I'm saying July 4th, we'll check notes next year, but I really appreciate the way you explained it this year. I thought it was fabulous.
Well, thank you, and Silvio, you have my word on that, and I'm very honored to do it. And to conclude it, I would just say God bless our audience, God bless us, God bless America.
You're exactly right. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's,
absolutely.
I love that. Thank you so much, Frank. Have a wonderful day up in Wisconsin, and I think we'll be eating some burgers later today, and I hope you do the same.
Absolutely. We will.
Okay.
Thanks so
okay.
much.
All right. Thank you so much. Frank Burke, Happy 4th of July to all of you. Thanking all of you for joining us again. This is the third year, yes, the third year that we've done this with Frank, and I've enjoyed it a great deal. Happy 4th of July, everybody.